it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Hello and welcome to the Unsuckable Podcast. I'm your host Manu Fate, and it's just two of us today. Just me and Josh. Josh, how's it going? Have you recovered from the World Cup yet?
I have. It's going really well. It's a shame that Adrian and Filippo can't make it here, but they were very busy throughout the World Cup, so I'm excited. We did a little conversation beforehand about our topics for today, and I think we got a few good ones.
We do have a few good ones, and you know, I'm glad it's over. I don't know how you feel. I spent the last week of the tournament on Hawaii, Josh. I'm not gonna lie. The moment my countries were all eliminated, I just kind of threw up my hands and said, I'm gonna take a week off and then, just watch the semifinals and final at 5 o'clock in the morning Honolulu time.
Wow. Well, I mean, was the trip lovely? Because I've heard wonderful things about Hawaii.
It's the first time I've been, and I wish I had stayed. I arrived. You've probably heard about the chaos in Vancouver, right?
Oh, yeah.
So I arrived 5 hours before the snow hit. And I wish my flight would have been the day after because I would be still in Honolulu.
Yeah. No, I mean, the World Cup was very interesting for several different reasons off the pitch. I mean, I talked to a few friends that went there to cover it, and they came back and you know, like it was a pretty cool tournament because like just what happened on the pitch, a lot of really intriguing storylines, but a lot of what I heard still of them coming back is simply just, you know, it was beautiful, it was fun, this, that, and the other thing, but what went into it, and it was just kind of like they couldn't get over like the build up to this tournament and everything that they know that happened, all the negative, and it was just kind of hard. They almost said it was hard to enjoy it because they know exactly what went into it in a way, but they did say like it still was pretty incredible being there because obviously like they put a ton of money into it and there was some incredible games, but it was just very interesting because obviously I mean we weren't in Qatar, so to hear fans and people who cover the sport coming back and saying that, it's kind of you know, humanizing, I guess, in a way.
220 billion dollars, Josh. What that tournament cost as much as all the other tournaments combined.
What's second? 5 billion? Was that
the Russia? Second?
Russia. A little bit more.
I think Russia was like 10. So that's mind boggling. Of course, with Russia, I guess we ignore that they built an entire city in the Caucasus for the Olympic Games, like what, 4 years earlier. Yeah. Which of course that infrastructure was used for the World Cup too, but yeah, I mean I had so many mixed feelings about it and still do. That's I think a story that we kind of want to talk about after we maybe chat a little bit about the final, right? About everything that went on the side of the tournament, and the human cost of the tournament was enormous, and I think unlike Russia, where the negativity was extremely high before the tournament, and then the media sort of got swayed by Putin and the organization of the tournament. And I was in Russia, and it was incredible, right? But the media completely switched to being positive about the tournament. I feel like that wasn't the case here, Josh. I think that maybe because we learned from the Russia experience, but I felt like media really stuck with it this time around and kept, despite I thought the separation was quite good, that we still celebrated what happened on the field and the athletes that obviously worked really hard to get there. And I think this is where we really need to separate the two things, right? The players worked really hard to get there and it's a celebration for them, but we still managed to outline the human cost with staging a tournament like that.
Yeah, I mean, and you saw it on the pitch as well. And I know that, I mean, the German national team got memed for it a little bit, but, you know, they tried to make a statement in a way. A lot of media continued it. And I mean, I mentioned a few colleagues and people I've talked to who've come back from the tournament, even after witnessing. And because, you know, like, I mean, even as a journalist, even as a fan, if you were at that final, if you experienced what I could only imagine was probably the most wild 50 or so minutes that you would probably ever see, to still come back and say, yes, it was awesome on the pitch, but it was still very, very apparent what was going on and what went into this World Cup. And it was very difficult to separate and make this feeling of this was an overly successful World Cup, because there's just those issues. And it's the reason this will and probably will be the most controversial World Cup of all time.
Yeah. And we should always remember it as that. I think Russia is probably up there now too, because like it took like what, another 3 years and the country invaded another country. And you know, even during the time of the World Cup there, because I was in Brazil when Russia shot down the Malaysian airline flight over Ukraine, right? And then Russia still hosted the World Cup 4 years later and then proceeded to increase the conflict with Ukraine to a full stage invasion. So I think in retrospect, that World Cup will always be remembered as a very negative mark, and Qatar, of course, as well. I think those are two black marks on the history. I mean, they're up there with 1978 when Argentina hosted.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, the difference, I think, even, I mean, way back when Argentina hosted to even Russia, but I think your point about the media, I felt at least, and I think you kind of said it too, I felt very different leading up to this World Cup and during this World Cup and even after this World Cup about Qatar than I did Russia. And I know that context of Russia over these last 4 years have changed a bit, but I just felt like the media didn't let the foot off the gas. They always made sure that everyone was aware, despite what Qatar was trying to do and make everything pretty and happy and whatever. And the quality on the pitch was incredible, but it's like no one forgot exactly what happened. And the media, I think, did a very good job at that.
Yeah. And I think this is, I guess, for us, as we lay the foundation of what we want to talk about, which is the final, right? Because we did a podcast last week about anything else. So, you know, we're just laying this kind of like the foundation for what we want to talk about, which is this incredible, crazy final, Josh. So let's put our focus on the field and the things that happened on the field and the things that athletes on the field did. And I really want to put a separator here between that and the host. We get to talk about the host once we've done talking about the final, because the host, of course, managed to somehow make it about themselves afterwards. But wow, the script. This was, in so many ways, an incredible final because of the two main protagonists stepping up. I think this was probably the first time since 1998 that we had two big figures of world football going toe-to-toe with one another, right? When Zidane and Ronaldo in 1998, of course, and Ronaldo, of course, a shadow of himself because he was so sick playing that final. So we actually were kind of deprived of it. That wasn't the case here.
No, it wasn't. And I think the thing that I also think made this World Cup final so special were all the different narratives going into it. Yeah. The passing of the torch, Messi's final dance, 35 years old, has lost the World Cup final already. Mbappe, obviously, at 18 has won one. He's already got 12 World Cup goals. It's his time Incredible. To shine. And they went toe-to-toe, and we kind of talked about this a little bit beforehand, but I know it's easy to remember this World Cup because it was 3-3, went to a penalty shootout, but those first 80 minutes from France were absolutely atrocious. I think Didier Deschamps just got everything wrong. Yeah. He yanked off Dembele and Olivier Giroud in the 41st minute because they were just playing. And I want to give credit as well to Scone here for starting Di Maria, because Di Maria was fantastic. Now, I'm assuming, Manuel, and correct me if you think I'm wrong, but I'm assuming he wasn't fit enough to carry on, because as soon as they made that shift and brought on Acuna, considering that Acuna should be playing nowhere else besides left back, but I got it. You know, you're up 2-0. Maybe you're getting a little bit nervous, but this is what can happen. Two goal leads are dangerous. You take off probably one of your most impactful players who had a really good match, brought on Acuna to basically not even go past the halfway line. He's almost useless. And then you just started to invite pressure. And then once an opportunity came, this game turned around very, very quickly. And I gave Argentina credit because once it was 2-2, I'm like, oh no, Messi's like, this isn't going to end pretty because the momentum completely shifted at that point.
Yeah, I thought, I mean, we have to remember too, the entire French team has been sick, right?
Yep.
So the final stages of this tournament, some odd sickness is going around. I guess that's what happened when you play in climatized stadiums and outside it's like about 35 degrees. Not good for you, by the way. So a lot of these players, France is riddled with a cold, I guess. And I think we have to remember that in the context of this game, because a lot of people complained that France was non-existent at the start of the match, which is true, they weren't. But I think that is really where I think that was the most impressive part, is that they kind of yanked themselves out of that, despite being physically not there. And I think that was obvious for everyone to see. And they somehow found a grain of energy to play what was probably the most insane 10 minutes I've ever seen play from a team. And you know what, Josh? I'm curious what you think about this. But I think if this doesn't go into penalties, but we play until someone scores, I think France wins this game.
I was going to say once extra time hit, there's always a narrative around extra time, whether you think it or not, but it's almost like you don't want to make a mistake. You don't want to put yourself in a position where the other team is going to score. You might as well just say, okay, you know what? We did what we did. And you see a lot of the time it just drifts off into a penalty shootout. Yeah. That was polar opposite. This the most exciting part of this match was extra time. We saw two goals. We saw plenty of chances. Martinez doing everything possible to not win the World Cup. Other Martinez making probably one of the most historic saves, especially in Argentinian history. But both were going for it. I mean, I think it could have went either way. But I mean, with Martinez's finishing, like Lautaro Martinez's finishing, probably would want to hand that to France. But I love that. I love the fact that they both wanted to go for it. Twitter was erupting when it was going to a penalty shootout, saying we don't want this extra time to end. This isn't how this game should be settled. Yada yada yada. Which is a different story, but this game could have easily ended in extra time. There could have been goals on both sides. It's just, I don't know. I just loved it because, like you said, France got this extra win. They woke up and then they actually started playing. And then Argentina, to their credit, dug themselves out of that mental lapse of conceding two late goals. Found a way to go up 3-2, lost that again. So, I mean, it was wild. I got to say, that 30 minutes was some of the funnest football I've seen this entire tournament.
I wish they would do what they do in the NHL for playoffs. And like after extra time is played, you just keep adding 10 minutes until someone scores.
Because it's an interesting debate because like I know with like this sport, it's a little bit different because I don't know like if there's rules about like, you know, how long can they really go for? You see a lot more cramping and yada yada. But how different of a context would it be knowing that it's goal and goal, you know? Like instead of sitting back, like I talked about, and going 30 minutes of just kicking the ball about to try to get to a penalty shootout, if you did play golden ball, you might not play the 30 minutes. You wouldn't have in this case. Argentina would have won it right then and there.
Yeah.
It is different, but I almost feel like, and I say it in hockey too, because like I had, and the World Juniors, my one buddy was just like, was livid that it was going to go to, he was livid that it went to 3-on-3 overtime for the World Juniors in the summer. And then he was going to be livid it was going to go to a shootout. Cause he's like, that's not hockey. I was like, well, they need to figure out a way to end the game quickly. I mean, like, does soccer go down 8-8? Like, I don't know, but like they don't want it to continue on, which is why they basically put in the shootout. So
it's also kind of legendary how in the NHL playoffs, you sometimes have like games go like into the morning.
I know that's true. It's a great point as well. I don't know the answer or the solution, but I mean, a golden goal would be interesting too, even if you just added that, just like, you know, if it doesn't happen, then you go to the shootout after 30 minutes. But if you put it in, there's got to be a little bit more because, you know, you don't have, you go for it and it's over. Like it's bang. Yeah. You can put bodies forward and not really have to worry about, I don't know. It's an interesting topic, but I mean, it was an incredible extra time. And that's the feel I want more because a lot of times, like I mentioned, extra time, it just kind of feels like the teams are playing for that shootout.
Well, I would just go for what I would do. I would play like the normal extra time. And then rather than going into a shootout, I would say, okay, well, you had your chance for 120 minutes to settle this. Next goal wins. That's how I would do it.
Yeah.
And you know what? I think it wouldn't actually take much longer than a penalty shootout.
No, I mean, that's fair. Because we haven't seen it. We, like, it's hard to speak about it because, again, if, I mean, any athlete would know this. It's like if you go in knowing, like, okay, 30 minutes, we got a shootout, or it's golden goal. So different. It's why, like, watching 3-on-3, like I know hockey. I'm just comparing hockey because there is that. Because, like, even when they play 3-on-3, you got to be careful of the bodies you put forward, because if you don't take that chance, you could get bit the other way. So
it's a mind game,
and then someone has to win. But I mean, it didn't happen in extra time. It did happen in a penalty shootout. And Mando, I don't know how you were thinking when it went there, but I was thinking that Argentina had this in the bag. I read a stat that Hugo Lloris has never saved a penalty for France. I looked at some of the kickers that were remaining for France. Martinez, one of the best penalty kicks at stoppers you're going to find. I was convinced as soon as it went to there that Argentina was going to be the heavy favorites, and it seemed like a pretty straightforward shoot. I don't know what your thoughts were going into it.
I wasn't so sure because Argentina has lost penalty shootouts with Messi at the Copa America, right? Against Chile twice?
Yep, was twice. It just
once? Twice, no, yeah.
Twice.
So I wasn't so convinced either that they would take it there. The thing is, what I thought was interesting is that both countries sent their best shooter first, which, by the way, that's how it's done.
Yep.
You don't pull a Brazil and wait until your last shooter for your best shooter, because you might not get there.
And I think in the 2012, I remember this is the first like media frenzy I saw about that. It was the 2012 Euros when Ronaldo didn't get a shot because he wants the glory. He wants to go fifth, and same as Neymar. I mean, Neymar won an Olympics. Do you remember that? And obviously against Germany, he did it that way. Yeah. He took number 5. He got the glory, but it's not all about that because you can't get there. So I mean, it's the different mindset. I mean, I agree. I like putting your best shooter first. Get off on the front foot. Maybe put your second or third. Like, I mean, Lautaro Martinez is a decent penalty taker. He was the one who was fifth against the Dutch, and he won it there. But I agree. You want to get off. You want to score. And Messi is taking penalties drastically different than he used to. He was not the best penalty taker. And I mean, he did miss one in this tournament, but his new style is a lot more confident. I think he does a little bit better of trying to read the keeper to see where he's going to move first and then just tap it home, kind of like Neymar-esque. But he was confident. He's went up when you mentioned that Argentina losing the pass, I felt like the biggest X factor was simply Martinez, because he's just so good at stopping penalties. And I mean, he stopped one, and then Tchouaméni had a poor miss there, which is, you know, it's tough luck there. But it was a pretty wild moment. And I feel like the next part of our conversation, Manuel, is going to be probably the most intriguing, the aftermath.
The NBA season is heating up, and there is still so many unknowns, like whether the Golden State Warriors will even make the playoffs this year. When I'm looking to get into the action, I bet with DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. New customers can bet just $5 pregame money line on any NBA team to win their game and get $150 in free bets if they do. Check this out right now. Everyone can earn up to 100% boost with DraftKings stepped up same game parlays. Go to DraftKings Sportsbook app, place a same game parlay, and combine multiple bets like which team will win, total rebounds, and more. The more legs you add, the bigger the boost, the bigger your shot to win big. I actually just won a same game parlay the other day, so if I can do it, you can too. Download the app now and sign up with code TBPN. Place $5 pregame moneyline bet on any NBA team to win their game and get $150 in free bets if they do. That's code TBPN, only at DraftKings Sportsbook. Minimum age and eligibility restrictions apply. See show notes for details.
Lately, I've been listening to a lot of Tactical Yanks, and it's been great. One reason it's been great to listen to? Because I use my Raycon wireless earbuds to do it. Raycon's everyday earbuds look, feel, and sound better than ever. With optimized gel tips for the perfect in-ear fit, these earbuds are so comfortable and they will not budge, trust me. Raycons give you 8 hours of playtime and a 32-hour battery life. Raycons are priced just right. You get quality audio at half the price of other premium audio brands. It's no wonder Raycon's everyday earbuds have over 50,000 five-star reviews. Raycon earbuds have 3 sound profiles so you can have a personalized listening experience. as well as an awareness mode where you can hear the world around you. Whether you're doing the most intense exercise or just sitting around, Raycon earbuds are perfect for you. Go to buyraycon.com/TBPN today to get 15% off your Raycon order. That's buyraycon.com/TBPN to score 15% off. buyraycon.com/TBPN.
Yeah, I mean, there's lots there. Let's talk about the French guys and what they received afterwards. And I thought it was absolutely disgusting, the reports of them being Chumani and Kolomouani, who, by the way, played a fantastic tournament. I mean, Eintracht Frankfurt must be just rubbing their hands that they got this guy on a free transfer. And yes, he missed that chance to essentially win it in overtime, right? But that's an incredible difficult shot. And he put it exactly where you need to put it. It's just that Martinez was unfortunately also there, right? Yeah.
He hit it smoothly. He hit it perfectly. Finish.
Like, what are you supposed to do? I mean, he's probably having nightmares about that his entire rest of his life. And Doudembe attacked the way these players were, where they had to shut down the Instagram accounts. I mean, that's just, I find that is just absolutely disgusting. And anyone suggesting this is a French problem, just stop and think for a moment. It's not. I mean, we had the same issue with England last year, right?
Yeah, I mean, we could go into this for, I mean, I just think you simply, I think there has to be a point in time where, I mean, it's Twitter's responsibility, it's Instagram's responsibility. Put like a verification of some way. So if someone's going to go on there and say a disgusting slur, it's directly connected to a person, you know? Like, yeah. There's got to be some type of risk to doing it instead of these user 844 says, you know, these terrible things. Like, it's not going to change. Like, you can't, I don't know. Like, if user 667 is never going to change. He's never going to change. He's always going to be that disgusting person, and there's plenty of them. Unless you can put some responsibilities, like, I don't know. That's just one, I mean, again, this is a huge, huge issue, but it's not surprising, and it's going to keep happening unless there's something.
I mean, we saw the same with all Canadian players, right?
Yeah.
Which, Alphonso Davies, the amount of abuse he received, including from some journalists, who were just not happy with him because he didn't speak to them. And I mean, how much of that is due to the color of the player's skin?
Yeah, Marc-Anthony Kay had a couple really poor performances, and he got hit pretty badly with some horrible remarks.
It's absolutely terrible, and it has no place in life, not even just in the sport, but in life. Which brings us to the next topic. And I had to mute this tweet, Josh, because, and I think many other journalists will also criticize this. I also had to mute their tweets. Criticizing a host for the way they handled the awards ceremony. And I understand that the Bisht is an honorable symbol. I understand. And I understand too that in many Arab cultures, it is the greatest honor you could give to a player. Do it afterwards. Do it at a function, a gala. Don't do it at the World Cup final. Don't do it at the World Cup final. And I understand Messi enjoyed the moment. He is, after all, owned and paid by the Qataris. What is he going to say? No? Me comparing it to Fabio Cannavaro in Lederhosen after he wins the World Cup in Germany is not racism. It's not. Stop it. It's not racism. That's not the definition of racism. It's not bigotry either. It's not how this works. If you are personally attacked for how Qatar handled the World Cup and the human rights issues, and the loss of life, and many of those people were Muslims, by the way. This is not us being racist towards our Arabs. It's us pointing out that the human rights record of the country Qatar that has an Arab population is not good, Josh. It's not good. There's a joke out there that for every goal scored at the World Cup final represents 1,000 people that have died to build the stadiums.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
so if you think that's racism, I'm sorry, but it's not racism. It's us being critical.
Yeah, and I mean, when I read your tweet, I got a chuckle, but I took it more so as just, I'm going to use a couple different words here. Awkwardness, pushy, like, in terms of doing it. Like it's like, could you imagine Cannavaro being like, hey, one sec, before you lift this, just step into this Lederhosen for me. Like, how uncomfortable does it make you feel? Because it's just awkward and there's no reason to do it. This is the biggest opportunity. It was the biggest moment for Italian football there. It's the biggest, one of the biggest moments for Argentinian football here. Let them enjoy it. And then, like, you talked about Pele and the sombrero later, and you can mention that, but it's like, it felt too forced. It felt like with the connection between, you know, the Qataris, PSG, and I was going to mention this earlier, and I just think it's hilarious. There's a lot of people who are furious about the World Cup being in Qatar, yada, yada, yada. But how much does it sting that this is the dream finale? This is the final they wanted. The two PSG boys, the future, the present slash, I mean, you know, Messi still could have a couple of years, but you get what I'm saying. It's the passing of the guard. It's the two PSG players. It is the dream final. And then on top of it, Messi wins it. And then you have the opportunity when the whole world is looking to just show, like, hey, you know, we nailed this tournament. This is exactly what I don't know. It felt uncomfortable. And it's the reason you got a spark. So, I mean, it's the reason your tweet got pushed, is because it rubbed a lot of people the wrong way. And it's got every right to do so.
I had 21,000 likes, I think. And it was about, I had to shut it off at some point. I have muted it. If you're still in that thread calling me names, remember 20,000 people resonated with it. And that should give you pause to think, you know, that the majority of the people, like if you were someone in there calling me names, and someone actually found my Instagram account and called me names on that as well. Stop it. I'm not racist. I'm anything but. I'm just critical of the way the tournament was put together and hosted. And that is not racism, because let's say the tournament is held in another MENA country, Morocco, for example. The cost would have been very different, Josh, right? And we think we would have celebrated it all very differently too. And maybe Morocco is going to get that change, a chance. I hope Morocco gets a chance. I hope an Arab-speaking country or a Muslim country gets the chance to host the tournament and show that it can be done without massive gross violations of human rights. But the bottom line is that this tournament was hosted at a country that has gross violations of human rights. That's the bottom line. And you cannot paint over that. And I see these other comments, like people just writing underneath, journalists like cry more. It's like, read the room. This was not the moment to hand out the bisht. You know, you do that afterwards. You do it at a ceremony where you honor you know, when dignitaries get honored. And we've seen that in the Arab world quite a bit, you know, when politicians or so on arrive and they get given a gown to wear. That's very different. That's a very different moment. The World Cup is about the team having won the World Cup. You want to see the jerseys. And the other thing that I had a really big issue with is, why would just Messi get it then, Josh? Because it's a team sport. Messi is the outstanding player, yes. But as you mentioned, Angel Di Maria, you mentioned Martinez, right? These players played a big role in winning the World Cup, but yet only the individuals honored. That's not how the sport works. And if you haven't understood that, then you have to also understand why there's such a backlash towards handing that out. And the other thing is, of course, it's handed out by the Emir and Infantino. So they captured and took that moment for themselves. And that's not correct.
No, and I'm going to, and I just literally thought of this. I don't know if this is a tweet or someone's probably mentioned it, but it just, another thing that on top of all the, you know, the corrupt and horrible things that happened through this World Cup, a big issue is sports washing. And it's almost like when you have enough money, anything is possible. And hear me out for a sec. Has there ever been a World Cup hosted midseason? Have you ever seen a World Cup winner, like you just mentioned, Messi, rocking a sombrero or rocking another, like something along the same lines? Has it ever been done before? There was so many, I mean, obviously the billions and billions of dollars more, like that. It was just all was maybe due to money. Like, I don't know, these conversations had place with PSG, like we mentioned, like if Lloris would have won and held it, would he have got it? I mean, it seems like money talks, and that's a big issue as well. And I mean, it's part of the reason so many people lost their lives building these stadiums. And it kind of all comes full circle. And it's just like, when you have so much money, you feel like you can pay away the negative news around it. And it's difficult to do. And media stuck with it. And it's why we're having these conversations, why we're going to continue to have them, because you can't just have I mean, and I know the World Cup final was a special moment. It was great to watch, but you can't just forget everything else that went into this World Cup just because it was an incredible final.
I also love the whataboutism that we've seen. The sombrero.
It was like Carlos, the example you use. Maybe give some context. Maybe give some context.
Carlos Alberto was handed the trophy in 1970 by the FIFA president. I think it was João Havelange, right? And then they proceeded to run around the stadium. And at some point, way after the World Cup was handed over, someone gave Pelé a sombrero. It wasn't at the awards ceremony. It wasn't the president of Mexico making that about himself. It was a fan. So here, great example. If a fan had given him that, doing the running around in the stadium, that would have been a beautiful moment. That would have been great, right? But not on the stage, not by a politician. And that's actually a really good example of how it's done versus how it's not done. It was organic in Mexico. This was forced,
right? Almost pre-planned.
Yeah, of course. It's not organic. And then so many of the greatest moments in football history are organic. The picture of Pelé with the sombrero is iconic because it happened out of the moment. It wasn't forced, right? And I think that is something that a lot of people don't understand or don't want to understand because they think that everything that we criticize is right away racism or bigotry. It's not. It's just us pointing out something that isn't right.
So speaking of, I guess, organic celebrations.
Oh my God.
you know where I'm going with it? Martinez? Organic or pre-planned?
Oh, I was thinking about steaks, but you go with Martinez first.
I mean, right after, that was before Messi, like, lifting the World Cup, right? Obviously? Yeah. They got the awards before it. Okay. So I'm going to say, I don't know. That was.
Oh, I know where you're going with this.
he's such a character. I mean, he's been having.
You wanted to say break, right? But yeah. Character works.
But seriously, to have the cojones to do literally. That picture when you talked about organic, hilarious. Like the look that the gentleman behind him was giving him that picture when he was just holding onto the glove and tongue kind of out. I don't know, man. I wasn't expecting to do it, you know, because like at the same time, you did just win the World Cup. You know, you're the best keeper at the tournament. I'm assuming you want. I don't know. He just didn't give two Fs. He said, "I'm gonna celebrate how I want. I'm gonna make sure that my views are known." And I'm literally speechless. I just needed to bring it up because I mean that felt organic.
Definitely organic.
Well, because you know, like I mean, like think of the Germany team trying to send a message, pre-planned. I mean, it was a good message. It's going to be a pretty popular picture for some people's views.
I wish they had won though.
But yeah, I mean, it was tough. I saw a nice tweet from Thiago who said their mouths were closed, but the goal was open. But anyways, but I mean, you know, it's like, did he plan it before? But no, it didn't seem planned. It seemed like I'm just grabbing this and I'm just going to celebrate how I feel like it.
Mm. Yeah, fair.
Did you hear any backlash, Manuel, like about the celebration?
I don't think anyone dares give any backlash to Emilio Martinez. I mean, he also was carrying around a baby Mbappe all over Buenos Aires before they had to shut down the celebrations.
I think it was lit on fire. I thought, or maybe not. Maybe that's a different. I saw someone lit. There was an Mbappe. Maybe it was different. Maybe it was just from fans. But there was an Mbappe like cutout, and it got or a jersey or something. A cutout wearing a jersey that got lit on fire. So yeah, maybe that wasn't Emiliano Martinez. But yeah, the celebrations were intense to say the least.
Yeah, it was. Did you see the people climbing out of the obelisk?
I don't know.
Oh, man. Yeah, it was wild. Really, really wild. So, speaking of celebrations, though, before we talk about that, Salt Bae making his way to the tournament, floor onto the field, forcing himself into pictures, at one point lifting the trophy. He's a really close friend to Infantino. a somewhat well-known steak restaurateur in the Middle East. I hear the steaks are terrible, Josh, but we live in North America. We have high standards. Has a gold-plated steak. Did you know that?
I did not.
Yes, there's a massive gold-plated steak that you can buy at a Salt Bay restaurant.
I'm not going to lie. I don't think I ever knew who... I mean, maybe I don't want to be. I don't think I knew who Saul Bay was. My girlfriend, I told you the story beforehand. My girlfriend took a look and at a video that was going around. He's like, and I saw Saul Bay doing what he was doing. I'm just like, I didn't know who he was. I just didn't. Maybe I just went over my head. But then my girlfriend's like, isn't this the guy who's that meme? And then she showed me the original video of him salting off of his forearm, pretty much. And I was like, what is this clown?
It's so uncomfortable. You should see. He did a video with Maradona once. And it's the most uncomfortable video I've ever seen.
You look up cringe on Google. This is what it looks like.
That's what it is. It's a face of Salt Bay.
Oh my. It was just so hard to watch. Like, again, talking about this is Argent. We don't give a rat's ass about Salt Bay. We care about seeing these players celebrate. And kudos to some. Like, I wish he did it to Emiliano Martinez. I would have loved to see him get pushed to the ground. Like, it was so frustrating. And, like, he did it with the third Martinez. He did it with Romero. He did him holding on to Messi for two straight minutes before getting a pitcher. Like, oh, I just wish he would have grabbed onto Martinez. I think it would have been so funny to see him get pushed around. But it's just like, know your place. Like, how do you want to be? I don't know. It was just so frustrating to watch. It was embarrassing, and he shouldn't have had access to this. But like you mentioned, we know why.
Infantino's close friend. You just look them up on their social media, and there's lots and lots and lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of pictures of them together. And that's how he got onto the field. And I tweeted yesterday, you are who you surround yourself with. You wonder who Infantino is as a personality. He is also Salt Bay. And you wonder how this World Cup tournament got put together. You look at the people in charge. You look at the people who are on the pitch. That tells you everything you need to know.
Yeah, right. Infantino was pretty strong about sticking up, saying that this is the best World Cup ever. We're gonna forget.
Yeah, he's got a little bit quiet about that in his last press conference. He was a little bit more. Of course, he said it, but it wasn't really enthusiastic. I think he understands that we don't buy it anymore.
No, and I mean, we talk about sports washing. I'm not gonna accuse, but who knows where the money's lying in between those hands? And who's meant to say what? And I don't know. It was uncomfortable when I saw Romero there with his kid, and Salt Bay took the World Cup away from him, and then teased the kid saying, "No, this is mine." Oh man,
I saw a tweet that like Salt Bay took the World Cup, threw it in a grill, and sautéed it on both sides for 1 minute, and then put some salt on it.
Another terrible look on this. This moment shouldn't be about Salt Bay. He should be nowhere near those pitchers. Yeah. We should be seeing what we want to see, and that's a lot of these players, because that's what it's about, celebrating the World Cup. And I mean, I give a little credit to Messi. I mean, I wish he would have rejected the pitcher, but Messi wanted no part. Like, we talk about cringe. I mean, like Martinez and Romero, I mean, they were smiling, they're playing along, they were being polite. Messi wanted no part of that. You could tell. Like, he's like, get off of me, man. Like, don't make me... don't make me do something I'm going to regret.
Well, Messi's really careful about his image rights. And I think he understood very quickly what this was about. And this was about Salt Bay promoting his restaurants. And like, essentially, you will see all these pictures in probably various advertisements and all over his restaurants, right? And he didn't want to have part of free advertising.
Yeah.
Which is good for him. His image rights are worth a lot of money. And that's essentially what happened there. And he identified that really quickly. So good for him to see what this was really about. I thought it was unnecessary. It was cringy. It was a very good image to end what happened in Qatar. Summed it up. It summed it up so well. Everything that happened at that award ceremony kind of summed it up. It was, if it is the picture of Martinez with the trophy, the bisht, the the Salt Bay, it's all, it somehow all puts together a really good picture of what this was about. And it's not great.
And we're kissing it goodbye, Manuel.
We're kissing it goodbye. And we don't have to deal with a World Cup for, what, 3 years?
Till it's in our backyard. 3.5 years.
Yeah, it comes to our backyard. By the way, hosted by another country that has a troubling history. And I've seen a lot of whataboutisms about it. And, you know, the US, of course, has a lot of issues. Canada's issues, Mexico's issues. But we're also allowed to say what we want to say in this part of the world. We earn decent amount of money. There is slave labor does exist, but not like this. There's safety standards when you build stadiums. So please spare me the whataboutism. Just spare it. Spare it to me. And when the tournament rolls around and whoever is president in the United States, I'm pretty sure we'll have our... We'll produce our fair share of criticism, Josh, as we should.
Yep.
But no, don't go there. It's whataboutism, and every tournament stands on its own, and the last two were pretty embarrassing.
They were. The next big major tournament coming up is going to be in your home country backyard, and there's a player that I'm really excited about this topic, but there's a player that might not be there.
Yeah. Manuel Neuer, because he decided to go ski hiking. Not skiing, ski hiking.
Ski hiking.
Who knows what exactly happened. Bill lovingly tried to recreate it, the moment where they sent a guy up to hike up the mountain where it happened.
Oh, man.
But... you know, I dissected that last week in great detail with Stefan Biankowski on the Gegen Pressing podcast. So if you want to hear about that, go back to it. I think what's interesting for this is, and you and I talked a little bit ahead of the show, is Manuel Neuer going to play at the Euros? I think that's very doubtful. And I think the other question is, who's going to replace him at Bayern Munich? And I think that's pretty interesting because they do have a good goalkeeper in Monaco, who they are trying to get back. But Monaco is A, making this difficult, and B, Nübel is not liking the situation either. But, you know, before we go into all of these details, and I think you want to probably ask some holes, what do you think of all of this?
I mean, it's a shame because, I mean, I know, like I talked about this before, a little beforehand, but we think so highly of Manuel Neuer because I just think he was a revelation in terms of the style of being a keeper sweeper. And he's so important, a lot more important to Bayern than it may look like on the surface. And he's a very difficult player to replace. But I mean, and this is why it'd be nice because I'll ask you some of the questions because you have more of the inside scoop. Yeah. But when Nübel came here, he was deemed to be the next Neuer. And they were very careful with how they were going to put him in. But they wanted to make sure that he got game time, and he wanted game time. And he went to Monaco, and he's, you know, he had a bit of a rough start, but I think he's really kind of found himself. And now the fact that it doesn't look like Neuer's not coming back this season, if ever, and those are some serious question marks. And I've been seeing rumors, and it's lovely having Manuel here because he has more of an inside track, but rumors that, one, he's not ever going to come back, or there's a big possibility he couldn't. Two, that they want to find a long-term replacement. And to me, just from the outside looking in, it's Nübel. I mean, you have him. I mean, just recall him from his loan.
Is not that easy.
Exactly. And that's what we're here to explain a little bit why. Because, like, again, from the outside looking in, that seemed like the obvious answer, right?
Yeah,
like you have a talented keeper out on loan, 26-year-old, hits the future. He's German. You bought him to be the Neuer replacement. Here's your opportunity. Manuel, what's going on?
Well, so first of all, we don't know if Neuer is going to come back or not, right? He has a history. He broke his metatarsal twice. He came back the second time, and that was took him over a year, which because it's a very complicated injury. It was a green fracture, which is not nice. Look it up. At a part of the body that's very hard to operate. So, and a part of the body that likes to break easily for big guys like myself. I'm the same height and weight as Manuel Neuer, so I know what he's going through. Injuries are a little bit more difficult to overcome because we carry a lot of weight, right? And when you are a goalkeeper of that size, you have to carry that weight at a really fast speed, sideways to sideways. And there's some neural parts in your body that have to carry that weight at a very, you know, very quickly. And so he came back from that, which was very touch and go. And he's really only one metatarsal injury away from his career being over anyways, right? Because the third one would be game over. This is also complicated because he broke his leg and they had to put in two screws to keep the bone together, and you know it needs to heal. And the earliest expectations for him to work with a ball, that doesn't mean work hard, you know, to actually work with a ball, just to get a hand on the ball, will be August, right? But people have to remember it takes about the same amount of time that you were out for a goalkeeper to come back to the level that you were at. We saw that with Neuer, right? Like the 1 year he was out, it took him another year to regain the level that he was at before. And on top of that, he wasn't at his best this year either, right? So we're already dealing with a keeper who's already declining and showed obvious signs of decline this year and now has this really big injury. And I talked to someone who said, okay, well, it's always athletes. Athletes are a different breed. But there's a good chance he's not coming back from this, Josh.
So I guess then, why is Nubel not the obvious answer? And if so, we talked about another rumor, Jan Sommer, incredible keeper. Right. I think of him very highly over his pretty impressive career with Borussia Mönchengladbach in the Bundesliga. 34 years old, though, doesn't really answer the question that
is
I've been
seeing. Is he already 34? I thought he was 33. Is he already 34?
I think I'll do a quick Google search. I'm pretty sure he's 34, but like I mean, either way, 33, 34, that's not the...
He is 34. Oh, yeah, he is. You're right.
But it's not the long-term solution you're really looking for, as opposed to a 26-year-old Nubel who's already in your ranks. So I guess, Manuel, if you want to theorize, why could Nubel not work? And then who do you think is going to be the keeper, I guess, for Bayern for the remainder of the season?
He is 34, you're right. He was 33 when I wrote my first article on this because he just turned 34 December 17th. So happy birthday, Jan. I talked to someone too who thinks that Sommer is just easier to get, which is why they're pushing for this. That doesn't mean that the Nubel story is true. Right. The contact, there's some pretty deep contact right now between Bayern Munich and Monaco as they're trying to hush something out. They still need to talk to Nubel as well and give him, I guess, some sort of plan on how they're going to proceed. But I think the Jan Sommer is a good option for them because he might be easy to get. Jan Sommer's contract expires in the summer. He's been linked to Inter Milan and Manchester United. And he is likely to go into leave Gladbach anyways. And this might be a good way for Gladbach to get a few millions out of it, right? They have a young keeper up and coming, Olchowski, who is a young, very talented young German keeper whose contract is also expiring at the end of the year. But, you know, he's like a ready-made replacement who could come in and take over the mantle of Jan Sommer. So I think this name is hot for Bayern because it's an easy get, Josh. But the issue here is he's 34 now, as we just established. And is he going to provide them with a long-term solution? I would say no. I think the long-term solution is currently playing in Monaco. And his name is Alexander Nübel. And he was the goalkeeper of the future. He was the goalkeeper who was supposed to come in and replace Manuel Neuer. And I think this really comes down to them making a fundamental decision here to say, okay, we're bringing you back. You are going to be the number one. And when Neuer comes back, or if Neuer comes back, let's say if, because we don't know, right? If Neuer comes back, there will be an open competition for the number one position. And I think that is the first stumbling stone right here, Josh.
Yeah, I mean, Nubel, every article I've ever read on him, I mean, he wants to play. And rightfully so.
He's a good young keeper.
But when you're competing with Neuer, it obviously made it very, very difficult, which is why he spent now a year and a half on loan at Monaco. But I mean, I just feel if you're Nubel, though, and again, I don't know what's going on behind the scenes because it could obviously be something to do there. But if you're Nubel, you're going to leave Monaco. I mean, let's be honest, Monaco is a good team. It's a team that should be competing for the Champions League. But in Liga, you're not going to probably win anything unless you can get like a cup victory, maybe Europa League type win. But you could go back to Germany, to where you wanted to be, to the club you signed for, and you know that Manuel Neuer is at least out for probably over like the rest of this season. And like you said, we don't know how he's going to be getting back to full fitness at the start of next, if he's going to even return. I think it's just, there's a lot of upside to going back to Bayern. You're going to be a winner. You're going to start. You got the Champions League run. You're going to have to, they're going to put a lot of faith in you. It just, that's why it just seems to be, and you're 26. So they're like, okay, the goalkeeping position, done. We don't need to worry about it. Where if you go out for Jan Sommer, excellent keeper. I think he'd do a great job over a year or two maybe at Bayern, but then you're right back to where you need to be. And what's going to happen to Nubel in that time? His loan comes to an end of this season. If Sommer's there, are you? I don't know. It just, and then you still have Manuel Neuer with the unknown there. So it's just, it's a very difficult position just from the outside looking in. I just feel like still the obvious one, hopefully for all parties, is to bring Nubel back and give him the ropes and see what happens. If Neuer comes back, like you said, open competition, back yourself, because we don't know what Neuer is going to look like when he comes back. Or Neuer's done, and guess what? You've done a good job locking down that number one spot. It's yours.
I mean, and that was always the intention when they first signed Nubel, right? He was supposed to be Neuer's long-term replacement. It's interesting, too, the stuff that's coming out now, because Alexander Nubel apparently has a difficult relationship with Toni Topalovic. Toni Topalovic is the goalkeeper coach of Bayern Munich and a very close friend of Manuel Neuer. The two spend a lot of time together outside the pitch as well, off work. They went to holiday in Croatia, for example, right, where Toni Topalovic is from. So a difficult relationship between Nubel and Topalovic, of course, means that this is going to be maybe, there has been some suggestion, and I said this to you before the show, right? We have this German game called Whisper Post. You call it telephone in English, where, you know, you say something in one ear and then the person says it into another ear, and the meaning of it changes. The problem is the main protagonists are not talking. It's the agent, it's Nubel's agent, and it's Topalovic sort of talking, right? And they're talking through what they've heard from other people. And so we don't actually know what's what here. It's very, you know, he said kind of thing going on here. And the problem with that, of course, is that the picture that's been painted is that Nubel is not coming back as long as Topalovic is there, which is odd because Topalovic and Neuer were apparently the people that recommended to the Bayern board to sign Nubel from Schalke, right? At least that's what that camp is claiming. So at some point, Topalovic has said, maybe Nubel just needs to call me and we need to talk it out. And that's probably a pretty good course of action, I would say.
Yeah. I mean, open dialogue is always important. It seems like the obvious answer. You have to hope that both parties come together, talk, and figure out a solution. Yeah. Especially because this is the long-term solution. It's 26-year-old versus a soon-to-be 37-year-old. So
yeah,
hopefully they can figure out a way to do it, because I personally think that Nubel's the correct answer. And the nice thing is that Bayern, you already own him.
Yeah, you bring back the keeper you have. I mean, if it doesn't work out over the next 2 years, you might have to do something else, but maybe go for the obvious solution first. That's at least what I would be doing. But I think, Josh, that's pretty much a wrap on this show. Unless there's something else you want to add. I think we covered everything.
Yeah, no, just the most controversial World Cup, or one of them, for a reason. Incredible end. Big congratulations to Argentina. And Messi. It was cool to see, despite, you know, everything that's going on. It was pretty cool. You could just tell Messi keeps his emotions intact. But I mean, he's the fact that he's posted like 6 Instagram pictures with the World Cup, he's as happy as he's ever going to be. But now we move on. Hopefully the next World Cup can have a better light on it. And there's a lot to look forward to, including the return to club football, which I can't wait.
Club football is back soon. Real football. And I think it's also, you know, we want to separate what with the stuff that has happened off the field with what's happened on the field, and Messi winning the World Cup. Congratulations, Argentina. I think it's the fitting end to what is probably a massive career. We'll see you soon in MLS, Leo. had to be done. Want to say, everyone, thank you for listening all this year. Happy holidays, whatever you celebrate. And a happy new year. And we'll be back next year, I think. Both Josh and I and the other guys are pretty busy over the over the holidays. So I think Josh, this is it until the new year, right?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. So okay, well, until then, cheers and bye-bye.